Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
And this is the Shame Free Zone. I'm your host, Veronica Monet, and tonight our guest is Catherine Toyoka. And I think I just botched that up again. Toyoka.
You said it right. Toyoka.
I said it right. Catherine, thanks for joining me in the Shame Free Zone. I'm going to read a little bit here about you because, my God, girlfriend, your background is just like it goes on and on and on. And I think the listeners are going to want to hear this because it's kind of an interesting collection of data here. We've got you in the criminal justice field from 1993 to 1999, working at the State of Colorado Public Defender Felony Investigator, Juvenile Detention Boot Camp Aftercare Caseworker, and Municipal Court Case Specialist. So, I mean, you sound like a total cop here. And then all of a sudden, in 2002, you decide you're going to become a sex educator. So you go through the San Francisco Sex Information Training and come out certified with the State of California as an Advanced Community Health Outreach Worker, which is also known as CHOW. And you've been specializing in HIV-STI street-level education to high-risk populations. And then from there, you start, I guess you became like, in your own words, a fierce ally, advisor, confidant, and educator to the young lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer community, and then help pioneer the concept of online outreach as a way of decreasing HIV-STI transmission in San Francisco. You joined the mayor's methamphetamine task force and secured a grant as the first known agency to incorporate live chat technology in the nonprofit setting. We're not done here, folks, in case you thought. I mean, I just kind of have to catch my breath. Then in 2005, you were handpicked to become an off-site sex educator with Carol Queen's nonprofit, Center for Sex and Culture. Hi, Carol and Robert, if you're listening.
Hello.
And, and then an adult retailer over at Good Vibrations. You became the brand ambassador with Good Vibrations in 2009. I don't even know where to begin, but I'm just going to work my way backwards. So what is a brand ambassador?
It's just a very fancy word for saying a tester, a taste tester,
You're just playing with all the sex toys.
Yes. I'm a toy tester, or it's not necessarily toys. It could be erotica, which I love, or it could be pornography, or it could be really anything that's, it could be those, one of the things I was supposed to review was called Truth or Dare, which is a Truth or Dare. It's basically a board game, but it's for adults. So things like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm a sex educator as well, San Francisco sex information grad.
Yep.
And then also certified through American College of Sexologists. And I have like a drawer full of stuff. They send me, oh, review this.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you ever try that pyramid?
the sex cone?
Yes, that one.
I never have, just because it looks unsexy. But
I don't want to get you into trouble because you may end up having to represent those people, but I don't have to. That thing sucks.
Yeah. I should say that even though I do toy tests for Good Vibrations, as a consultant, I'm more of a, I like to consider myself a female couture or luxury sex toy ambassador. So I'm really fond of like the Jimmy Janes and Lalo and even Shiri Zen. So ones that you have to spend a couple bucks for, but they're gonna look really beautiful and they'll last for a while.
So what is your favorite combo? I mean, you probably got a dildo vibrator condo that just rocks, right?
You know, it totally depends on my mood. And I hate to say this, and I think it's so, we don't talk about it enough, but my favorite sex toys are my 10 fingers. I know. How boring is that, really?
No, you know, it's actually not boring. But I have to say, I'm such an efficiency slut. Oh, no, I don't want to take my fingers. It takes too damn long. But every once in a while, actually, I reach down there with the fingers, and it feels unfamiliar because I'm so used to having a vibrator down there.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I'm one of, it's a, probably a dirty sex educator, little known fact about me, that I've never used the Hitachi magic wand.
You're kidding.
I know. And everyone's like, you have to get one. I have one. I just, you know what? They look really bulky. I know they got the job done, but aesthetically for me, they don't do anything. So I'd much rather have, like I say, something that looks really beautiful, like Jimmy Jane or Shiri Zen, which may not have that power punch. But it also doesn't sound like you're, like everyone knows what you're doing. Your neighbors know what you're doing when you're, you know, plugging it into the wall.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually used, it's not a Hitachi, but it's very similar. And you know what? It's downstairs. I can't remember the brand, but it's, you plug it in the wall and the thing's got a huge,
vibe.
Huge head on it and two speeds. But, I used that in the last porno I did, which was in 2005, I think. I did something for the folks over at Libido.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can't hear anything.
Oh.
It's so loud.
Yeah, yep.
They are very, very loud. And then Terry Goodson, who was a sex worker rights activist, she was in the very first video that I ever produced. And she used a Hitachi that had a double head on it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it dimmed the lights at one point while we were filming.
It, you know what? It literally scares. When I bring them to, I bring a whole variety of sex toys, but as an educator, many times I'm going into schools and colleges, and it always quiets the room. I bring... sometimes I'll play games with people, like trivia games, where I'll have a bell that I'll ring, but nothing, you know, dims the room and makes it quiet faster than plugging in the Hitachi magic wand and putting it on full speed.
Well, yeah. Now, Good Vibrations used it, for the listeners here, if you don't know who Good Vibrations is, because it's kind of a local thing here, very, very well-known vibrator dildo sex shop over on Valencia Street in San Francisco, and it's one of the first ones in the country that was woman friendly.
Yeah,
how many years now?
33 years this past month.
33 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's before Toys and Babeland, and before what is the one in Boston? It's also down in L.A.
Toys and Babeland. Oh, Pleasure Trust?
Well, there's that. There's one in Boston. I can't remember the name of it. It'll come to me probably, but Kim Ayers owns it. Kim Ayers owns it. She's got one in Southern California and one over in Boston. Anyway, but before all of that was Good Vibrations. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first places where the women could go and feel comfortable about buying sexually oriented material without having to be around all those little quarter machines where the guys who like to go in and jerk off would frequent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like, how disturbing is that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I want to get a vibrator. I don't want to talk to a guy who's just had his dick in his hand.
Mm-hmm. Or someplace else.
Or someplace else.
Right.
I actually been in one of those booths a long, long time ago, and it really is. I mean, it's, the walls are covered. It's disgusting.
Yeah. It is, there's nothing fresh about those
No,
so
no.
I did outreach in the mission, and I would go to those little video booths. They would not let me go back there because they were, you know, deemed gay, male-oriented. I'm like, you know what? It's obviously I'm not going to be doing anything. I'm just here handing out condoms and people want them. And they ran me out. It was so funny, but before they did, I got to peek in a couple of the booths, and oh my goodness, that is a good place for a stick up.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding, it is. So, but speaking of masturbating in mm-hmm. you know, public places, Good Vibrations actually always had a room where you could go in and try out some of the vibrators. But wasn't it like over your clothes?
Well, they do have everything now over your clothes. Every single product they sell, and again, I don't work. I'm a consultant, so I'm off-site. So when universities or bachelorette parties call up and they say, I want a private sort of pleasure party, and I'd like an educator come out and talk to us, that's when I would be called in. So I don't work at any of the stores, at any of the retail stores, but all of their products that they do sell, they do have out, and they are there for you. It's very, I wouldn't say it's clinical looking, but it's very warm and welcoming, very good, good sunlight and good light, so there's nothing seedy about it, and every single toy that they sell is out there for you to demo. Now, it's not for you to demo underneath your clothes, but you can touch it, you can smell it, see if it's got, you know, any sort of toxic smells coming out of it. You can feel it. You can put it over your clothes. You can try it on a partner, things like that. But, you know, it's in a way where people, you know, will kind of knock their friends, you know, over the head with a dildo. Kind of see how much resistance it gives. But it's very, the people who work there are very, very fun and very educated as well, because everyone goes through a mandatory sex educator, sales associate training before they're put on the floor.
Oh, yeah. It's a really enlightened place.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a very enlightened place. What do you think the favorite sex toy is? What's the biggest seller?
You know, I think it is the Hitachi Magic Wand. I think everything I hear from people is that is their go-to. People really like the rabbit, but the funny thing about the rabbit is that it's known because it's got that brand name, you know, that's been featured in Sex and the City. But most people I know only use the rabbit ears to use on their clitoris. So it's
interesting. Oh, and it is just such a delicious thing for that. I wish they would make something that didn't have, because the rabbit pearl, I adore it because it's got the little ring of pearls that mm-hmm. circulates around the vaginal entrance, which is, you know, we know actually the legs of the clitoris extend all the way down there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really sensitive place. And then you've got the little rabbit ears that are hitting on both sides of the clitoris, which I think is really intense, because if you're using a Hitachi wand, then you can pick one side or the other or the whole clitoris, but the rabbit ears are, you know, they're more subtle than that. But the shaft that actually gets inserted, it mm-hmm. oftentimes wears out because I think so many of us are trying to bend it in a position where those little rabbit ears will do and
work with the shaft part, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And some people don't like it. I mean, it really looks, if you take a look at the contraption, the rabbit, it looks like, you know, it's a little roto-rooter going around in there. And some people find it really unpleasant. So,
well, it makes a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And then when your batteries wear down, that's not so cool.
Yeah.
You always have to have a spare set of C batteries. And I've actually, in 20 years, I've been through more rabbit pearls than I can count.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've buried so many rabbits, it's not funny. Well, since they're a novelty item, they don't guarantee them. But I was talking to somebody actually at the camouflage in Santa Cruz the other day, and they were telling me that one of the reasons those wear out, and actually, you know what, I think I got that wrong. I think it was Pure Pleasure that was giving me some instructions on the rabbit pearl. Anyway, that the new ones now they're developing so that they have a little more flexibility in the dildo part, mm-hmm. because that was wearing out for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. It's really interesting, and it's great. I mean, you're mentioning like three different sex toy stores just in the area, and it's so nice that in this day and age you have that flexibility where even, you know, 10, 15 years ago, people, even if they had the interest, there wasn't, you know, this great variety of places to go that are very female friendly.
Absolutely, and couple oriented. And I was actually mm-hmm. down in Santa Cruz last week and hanging out at the stores. I gave a presentation over at Camouflage, but at Pure Pleasure, I hung out for a couple hours and answered questions for people.
Oh my God,
that's
awesome!
I used to bring my vulva puppet with me.
Yep.
You know, you can explain to people what a vulva puppet is because you're the expert.
Oh no. With a vulva puppet. I love my vulva puppet. And I've actually uploaded a newer video on YouTube where it says vulvas aren't vaginas, because there's this, everyone talks about their vulva as if it's a vagina.
Right.
Which is, I mean, I think everyone does it. It's so easy to do. But vulvas, kind of like if I were to strip down naked right now and show everyone my lady parts, what they would see would be my vulva. Everything externally is the vulva, and that's the beautiful thing about the vulva puppet, is that it really is this tangible representation of what many people have trouble putting names to, let alone talking about.
So, exactly.
Yeah, the vulva puppet shows how, and it's, you know, it's again, when you talk about it, it's like these are on the very female side of people who are biologically born women. This, not everyone's going to look like this, but we, you know, mostly have the same parts, which are the outer labia, the inner labia, the clitoral hood, which is so similar to the foreskin in a man's penis, the clitoris, the urethra, and a G-spot, and inside the internal vagina, and then the anus. So it's really a great way of showing people, and, you know, our bodies can't go, I can't push my vagina inside out. I know sometimes when women get older and they, you know, are having some medical issue, sometimes their uterus has a tendency to fall out. I mean, unless you're in that capacity, you're not really able to push your vagina inside out to show people, and that's the beauty of the vulva puppet.
I use it a lot of times to show people where the G-spot is.
Exactly.
And also I just have them insert their fingers into the uh-huh. into the vaginal tract so that they can feel that pelvic floor, the spongy.
Yes.
Yeah, the spongy tissue that's right up there with the G-spot, so they can just feel how it kind of feels a little bit bumpy and rough like the roof of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that differentiates it from the rest of the smooth walls of the vaginal tract. And a lot of people go, oh, I didn't realize that.
and then it
makes the G-spot just that much more real for them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people still, in this day and age, they don't like to talk about masturbation. And, I mean, I know when I'm touching my vagina inside, it feels so amazing. You know, it's so smooth, it's so silky, and then when you do feel that sort of wet, spongy feel, and then sometimes I feel like, ooh, okay, that makes it feel like I kind of have to pee. That's the G-spot area. So the rest of the vagina feels amazing, so, you know, it's no wonder why we're masturbating so much. But really, it's got a unique texture, and then when you feel that different spongy difference, it definitely feels different from the satiny, smooth vaginal.
Well, yeah, and every woman's different. I mean, some women okay. really enjoy having their G-spot stimulated, and others find it kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So,
totally.
Yeah, but it's nice to know where all the parts are. Now, I'm sure you heard that they announced two more spots this last year. It was in the New York Times, the U-spot and the A-spot.
Yeah, I that's a little, it's, I think as an educator, it's good for me to know, but I think most people have a hard enough time just dealing with the technicality of a G-spot and, oh, my God, you mean that I can, that through G-spot stimulation that I can possibly even ejaculate. I mean, trying to put in some extra spots is a little bit technical.
Thought that it was a kind of lame, frankly, mm-hmm. because the U-spot is, you know, the urethra. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, you know, this could be an arousing area for people, but I mean, why just a spot? I mean, we're not machines with buttons. Right. You know, the point about the human body is that the entire body is an erotic, you know, organ, mm-hmm. and the skin most of all. And then the A spot, which is the anterior side of the cervix, same mm-hmm. thing. I mean, okay, mm-hmm. so for some people, the anterior side of the cervix supplies a lot of pleasure. I mean, for some people, it's the tip of the cervix. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you felt about that. I just thought it was kind of like, here we go again, still trying to dissect the female body.
I read it, and I'm like, okay, I it's good for me to know, but I'm not going to be adding that to my workshops because it's too technical. But if people want to know about it, then it's something that I can say out, you know, give me your information. I promise I will follow up with you because I find most often it's overwhelming for people to talk, to see a vulva puppet. But what I love about the vulva puppet is obviously I'm not going to, I mean, I might be really, really popular as a sex educator if I were to get naked and use the toys on me to show people. But
right.
I probably get booked a lot more than I am.
Well, we're not all Annie Sprinkle, honey.
But you know, not everyone can do that. So it's really great to be able to use the vulva puppet and show, okay, this is the G-spot. This, whenever you see a sex toy that's got that curve to it, that curve, this is how you would use it, and that's why. So it's great. It's perfect. I love it. I carry it with me all whenever I go on my workshops. And you know, I'm still been trying to come up for a name for her, and I just can't come up with one. So.
Yeah. Well, I just like to walk around with it when I'm in a store, and I fold it up in people's faces and go, "Hi, have you met my vulva puppet?" The looks on their faces is just, you know, makes it so much fun. Now, we should mention that the vulva puppet is actually produced by House of Chicks, and that is, what was that, Dory?
Dory Lane, I believe.
Dory Lane. Dory mm-hmm. Lane is the owner, proprietor of House of Chicks. So she's got pocket-sized and she's got full-sized, and there and so many beautiful colors. It's
mm-hmm.
just gorgeous.
Yeah, and they're all, I believe they're, I think they're still handmade. So, they're really well made. I, as an educator, I go on, you know, dozens of workshops a year and I take it with me and it has stood the test of time. So I've had mine going on, 5 years, 5 or 6 years. So it definitely is, it's, everyone loves it, and it's a great, again, like tangible representation of what we're not supposed to talk about or even see.
Exactly. Now, speaking of what we're not supposed to see,
mm-hmm.
I just want to check in with the listeners and say we have got a sex expert here. You want to talk to this woman. Her name is Catherine Toyoka, and she's here to answer any questions you have about sex toys, sexuality, dating, flirting, you name it. Catherine coaches relationships. And we've got, if you want to call in, the number is 530-413-4515. Once again, that number is 530-413-4515. You can also leave a message on Facebook, and I've got over 1,400 friends on Facebook now, so that's really cool.
Yes, you do.
And,
I was so excited when I got added.
Well, I'm honored to add you, Catherine. But we've got a comment here, and I had asked, "What's your favorite sex toy?" And I'm thinking you might be able to help this woman out. Her name is Melanie Hawaii, and she says, "I had to get rid of them because of kids." So, what would you say that to a mother? She's a young mother, as far as I can tell from her picture. Hi, Melanie. Thanks for posting your comment. And we're going to see if Catherine's got a solution for you, because I don't think any woman should be without sex toys.
No, that's so sad. That my little heart just broke when I heard that.
No, mine too.
Well, and I'm someone who I've always known from a very early age, so I'm just going to put that out there that I am child free and I'm very happily child free. So I, even though I have thousands of dollars worth of sex toys, I get to display them freely and willingly.
Right.
But for people who are parents, it is a common concern. But what is wonderful are there are a lot of newer companies that are coming out. One off the top of my head is my friend Vera, who does For Your Nymphomania, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And they do locking. It's locking luggage. So it looks like a piece of luggage or kind of like a duffel bag, and it locks. Or, you know, if you don't want to go that route, many people keep a safe. Just like sometimes when I went to college, I'd put my jewelry in a carrying safe, a small safe that has two different layers to it. It locks. That is perfectly normal.
Huh.
Kids not going to know, you know, they'll be like, oh, well, that's mom's good jewelry. Okay, that means you don't go in there, and you know you can put the key someplace else. And that's something that would not look out of place at all. If you put it in luggage, a locking piece of luggage. If you put it in even a safe that you can buy at your local hardware store that has a lock to it, people aren't going to look. A lot of people try and put them in, you know, shoe boxes or. And then sometimes they might either forget that they've had them, or sometimes there are animals that sometimes like to chew things and sometimes don't get into places where they're not supposed to. So my best bet is to put it in a location that is not easily accessible, but in a locking, some sort of locking contraption. So like a piece of luggage or a safe that's, and I'm not talking about a safe that's built in, kind of like a walking safe. You know, like when you go to workshops and you're paying, you know, $20 at the door, they have a safe there with the money. It's just something very similar to that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I just, thank you. Thank you, Catherine. I actually, these were excellent ideas. It would have never even occurred to me because I had a totally different standard when I with my kids. First of all, if they had found the six toys and asked questions, I would have just answered them.
Exactly.
But
mm-hmm.
But you know, and then the other thing was basically that, you know, I don't have to lock it to, you know, tell the kids you're not allowed in there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I realize not everybody has those circumstances. So, and you know, I think those are excellent ideas. So I just posted them on the Facebook page. And,
yeah. Excellent.
Courtesy of Catherine Toyoka, so people know where these great ideas are coming from. And I'll let you know if anybody else posts here. I check it every couple of minutes. And I have also told people we're going to talk about body image. I was particularly interested to hear what you had to say about body image because you kind of stressed that on your website.
Oh,
and
cool.
it's a problem, don't you think? I mean, especially for women, but also for men.
It is. In everyone. I mean, I can talk from my personal experience. I've, you know, dealt with my own issues with body image, and I'm really happy and I'm fortunate to say that I'm finally at the point. I'm 38 years old, but I'm at the point where I can appreciate beauty, comment on other people's beauty, but not make it diminish my feeling of my self-worth. Or make me feel like I have to strive for that, which is I'm really happy to say I it's taken me a long time to learn, but I can appreciate beauty, but not have to feel like that's taking away from me. Where I think a lot of the times we're programmed, particularly with advertising and media and movies, is you know to see people and be jealous of them, but not only be jealous, make ourselves feel worse in the process.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, but yeah. But how does one get over it? And just to check in here with our listeners again, we actually are starting to get a little bit of posting here. Becky Barnes says she has friends with kids that just hide their sex toys in closets, mm-hmm. drawers, bags, cases, etc. And then I posted this question: do you like your body? And Melanie Hawaii says yes most of the time. Becky Barnes concurs most of the time yes. what would you say for the rest of the time? Maybe we want to love our bodies all the time, but I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who you know, probably have a love-hate relationship with their bodies. It's easy enough to say that we have to get over the media messages, but how would you suggest one goes about doing that?
Well, you know, I think most of us, if you think back to a time, and this is a workshop I do, which is Love Your Body Now by Finding Your Fabulousness. So I'm doing that workshop. I'm going to be at the, I think I'm going to be at the Center for Sex and Culture. I'm doing it in probably at Good Vibrations, and then I'll be at Fascinations in a month or two doing the same workshop. So it's something that in my workshop, one of the things I do is everyone can think back and kind of doing a guided imagery is think back to a time in your life when you felt the absolute most confident in yourself. You know, and it doesn't have to necessarily be your body. It would be great if you can think about it, because I think most people can pinpoint a time in their life when they felt just really good about, you know, looking in the mirror and saying, you know what, I like it. And it could be a week ago, it could be 20 years ago. But just how, you know, people who are work with bodies and do massage, they say that trauma is stored in the body. I believe that confidence is stored in the body. We just don't know how to access it. So I think that by getting into that mindset of really getting into that point of when you felt the most confident, picture what it was you were wearing, what it was you were doing, who you were talking to, you know, what do you smell, the smells that were around you, and what was it about you that felt so confident? You can conjure up that image on it in a daily basis, and the more you do it, the easier it is to conjure up those feelings, those confident feelings. And it sounds kind of, you know, woo-woo and out there, but before I even knew what this was, I used to do it to, you know, to talk myself up before I was giving a presentation, or before, you know, I was going to talk to someone, I was really nervous. So it's stuff that, you know, it's taught to us, but in a different way. You know, it's not necessarily about body image. It's about, you know, feel confident and not like you're going to trip over your words or say something stupid or give a bad speech. The same sort of principles that are used for being confident in those situations you can use in your body.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we actually got a comment from Becky Barnes here. She just instant messaged me and said that her issues actually aren't related to the media, but that it's more about the fact that there's changes in her health. Mm-hmm. And I share that, actually. I've got, like, food allergies and female hormones. And I just frankly think the female body was created or evolved, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. However we got here the way we are now, it seems that the female body is always morphing. It's like when you're in your reproductive years, you know, you get your breasts will enlarge and they'll shrink, and depending on your period. And, you know, we all have those set of clothes that we wear when we're PMSing and the clothes that we can wear when we're not.
Right. And I think that's really, I mean, there's so much, and it's so much that can affect our confidence and our body image, which then can relate to how we relate to other people, and also how are we going to feel sexually? I mean, you know, people don't talk about genital shame, but that's huge too. And that's one of the things I talk about as well. But, you know, it's, I think, you know, when we're not feeling good, when we're not feeling optimal, and so many of us just feel like we're getting by day, you know, we may not be able to work out or even, you know, function at the rate that we used to when we were younger, and that's just a fact of life. So you've got to kind of embrace, you know, kind of mourn, you know, the fact that, you know, the body's changing and it might not ever be the way it was when you were 18 or 20, but you have something now that's fabulous and that's working for you, and, you know, what are all the great things that has, you know, happened to you to get to this place? Are you a mother? Do you have wonderful kids? You know, did you get to spend time with your, you know, family when, you know, were you able to spend time with your family when they were sick? Are you able to get up and walk every day instead of having to use a wheelchair? Things like that. I think we're so focused on perfection that we forget about that our body takes a terrible toll, but we should be really grateful for what it does for us while it's working.
Well, if that is really, I mean, for a woman especially, the focus becomes so much about what she looks like as opposed
right.
to how she feels.
Yeah.
So, and so we're, you know, not showing up in an embodied fashion where we're having an experience of being inside these bodies and really appreciating all the sensation and feelings that they can bring to us, as opposed to what it looks like from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, the female breast is probably the most tragic example of this what I would consider a perversion of priorities, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's essentially got two roles. One is to feed offspring, and the other is to provide sexual pleasure for the woman who's wearing them.
Mm-hmm.
and it seems our culture's focus has become so twisted into it's about arousing sexual pleasure in somebody who might be viewing them or touching them.
Right.
That, you know, now we see women who are breastfeeding getting kicked off of planes.
Yeah.
You know, people are scandalized by the fact that women breastfeed, but they don't have a problem with, you know, somebody running around showing almost every part of that breast as long as it's not in a reproductive fashion and there's no
right.
baby attached to it.
Yeah, somehow that becomes obscene, right?
I just don't get it.
The most natural thing in the world.
I know. I know. It's mind-boggling to me. And then, you know, the way that they now insert the breast implant is often through the nipple because they didn't want to leave a scar because, again, the focus is on what it looks like. So putting
mm-hmm.
a breast implant in through the nipple, I know because a girlfriend of mine had it done, and it absolutely rips all the nerve endings up from the nipple so that there's very little sexual response left in the breast.
Mm-hmm. That's probably less important to her, or the fact that, you know, possibly you might not be able to breastfeed. Oh, well, that's okay because I want to look good.
I know.
Or
I know.
People
and
really
I'll tell you, it was a real awakening for me when my girlfriend got an upgrade, quote unquote. She was like a double C and decided she wanted to be a D, right?
Right.
So she goes back for yet another breast job. And two things. I came to the hospital while she was recuperating, and she's on a serious morphine drip. And
mm-hmm.
I remember thinking to myself, my God, this is major surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Why did I think this was just a little cosmetic procedure? And then she showed up at lunch one day, and she had the explanted breast implants that I had been having sex with for a year. She put them in this little clear container with a bow on it and gave it to me as a gift at lunch. And I thought, you know, I am never going to make love to a plastic again.
That is so wild.
So I got over my big boob fetish right then and there. I started dating girls with little flat chests, and I learned that that was just beautiful.
Well, and oftentimes, the closer, the smaller the breasts are, the closer the areola is to the actual breastbone, the more sensation.
Well, and that was the whole thing, too. I mean, you know, I loved those breasts, but they never responded to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She didn't have any sensation.
Mm-hmm.
I was so sad. I mean, you know, after I got over being a 17-year-old boy, I felt like a complete idiot.
Yeah. Well, it's they're very sensual. They're very, it brings back that nurturing, safe, warm feeling for people. And I get it. I mean, I get that that's why people love breasts, why, you know, women and men love breasts. I get it. And, you know, I also know that I'm hugely naturally breasted, and which is very odd considering I'm half Japanese. But I would, you know, I would love perky B cups, but it's not in the cards, and it wouldn't necessarily fit my body type either. So, you know, it's something that everyone has their, you know, their say on it. Everyone's got their view, and they're very
well,
and they're more than happy usually to share it.
Yeah, I just you know, I want to see us move to a place where our focus and what's foremost in our minds is about women's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, yeah. And that is just, even now with all the promiscuity that's going on with the younger generation, I feel like female pleasure has still gotten lost in the shuffle.
And, you know, it's so funny, that is one of the main reasons I got into sex education. I had an aha moment watching an Oprah when there is a scandal about, you know, these 12 and 13-year-old middle schoolers giving oral sex to guys for popularity, for acceptance, to be cool, to be asked out, but they were getting nothing in return, and they didn't ask for anything in return. I'm like, that is seriously wrong. There is something, I mean, besides the fact that they're engaging in oral sex so early,
yeah.
But they're absolutely doing it willingly without ever even considering their pleasure.
That's it, Catherine. I couldn't agree with you more. And as a former sex worker, of course, I was always horrified that these girls were doing things like pole dancing and girl-girl action for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
mm-hmm.
You know, it needs to stop being about the male gaze. It's like, you know, don't do that to please your boyfriend. You know, let him know how he can please you.
Yeah. Well, isn't that how the whole term heteroflexible kind of came about, too, is
yeah.
Women who are, you know, they're heterosexual, but if their guy is wanting to engage in a threesome, then they would be considered, you know, not lesbian or bisexual, but heteroflexible because they're wanting to please their male.
It's funny to me because I was part of the bisexual political movement back in the early 90s. Part of the Bay Area Bisexual Network, and I was a staff writer for Anything That Moves, the first
mm-hmm.
national bisexual magazine. We were working very hard to get bisexual added to the gay parade. I mean, it was a big deal back then, and I
mm-hmm.
had boyfriends drop me because I was bisexual. Now, if you're not a bisexual female, you are really, you know, behind the times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're 20-something or you're
late teens.
Yeah,
there's just kind of this assumption
like,
now that all women are bisexual.
Yep.
So we've got to get back to body image here. I just want to check in here because we got Becky Barnes has come back with some really good advice for our listeners about how you can like your body. And this is what Becky Barnes recommends. And, you know, she's not a sexpert, but she's got obviously a handle on this because she likes her body most of the time. And she says you can stop looking in the mirror so much and focus more on being healthy and not what size you are or what some mm-hmm. temporary fashion says you need to look like. Stop focusing on the media. Look at others and find what you like about them and see how different most are from what the media shows. If you are really having a hard time seeing the beauty in yourself, then you need to try to figure out why. Is it because you honestly think you are not beautiful, or is it because you are hearing things others may have said about you throughout your life? Also, look to artwork. Artists tend to portray so many realistic body types in beautiful ways. It might teach you to see the human form in a different way. I think that's excellent advice. One of the reasons I like to look at art is because the standard for beauty keeps changing with each century.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes faster than that, but, you know, I remember one time I saw this young woman in a department store, and I said, you must be a model. You look like a model. And she was like, thank you. And I remember thinking to myself, but I think models are ugly this year.
And she's all like, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. She thought that was a compliment.
Yeah,
and
I
certainly didn't want to insult her, but I remember thinking to myself, I wasn't thinking you're beautiful. I was just thinking you have the look.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have the look that's in this year.
Right. and the heroin chic or whatever.
Right,
whatever,
exactly.
Whatever it is for the moment.
Yeah, and I or completely emaciated.
Yes.
So I would like for us to, you know, actually start seeing all this diversity as being beautiful. Wouldn't that be something, instead of trying to just pick whoever and whatever? Like, okay, well, now it's going to be this.
Yeah, and I think
because always somebody has to lose.
Yeah, it's difficult, and I think it's I do really enjoy, what is it? Is it Renoir? Is it who does some of the older paintings of like these goddessy women, where they're very full figure, they're beautiful, they're laying back, they've got full breasts and, you know, bellies and hips, and it's just very erotic and it's beautiful, and that's really what a woman should look like. It's not, you know, a prepubescent boy, which clothes look fabulous on. I mean, obviously, and that's what we're kind of programmed to think that we need to look like, is, you know, a prepubescent boy.
I couldn't agree more. A pubescent boy with breast implants.
Yeah, tits on a stick.
So who winds up being the most beautiful women in the world? Transgendered people.
Yes. I love transgendered people. Oh, my God. I think they're the most fierce and really underappreciated, but they are the strongest people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
You have to be so resilient to go through what they go through.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, you have to. And mm-hmm. they are some of the most maligned people. I mean, that's a minority that nobody even talks about yet. But, you know, especially for the sex worker population, they are the most murdered group.
Oh, I know. Yes. I was working in San Francisco for almost 6 years, and I dealt with people who, many were transgendered, and of course, they were HIV positive if they were receiving the services of my agency. And they would go, there were a couple who were murdered, and no one seemed to care. I mean, obviously, people cared, but it did not go very far, and I believe the murders are still technically, unsolved. And it's amazing. It's amazing. And transgender people are, I have such a huge amount of love and admiration for them, just because of what they go through on just a daily struggle, that I feel like I can glean some of their strength from them and kind of like bathe in it.
Absolutely. I've always thought it would, it must be fascinating to just see how stupid human beings are from every angle,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm,
you know, like
mm-hmm.
you're the same person, but they treat you one way because you got one set of plumbing, and then they start treating you a different way because you got a different set of plumbing. And you know, if somebody swears that they love you, but then you get an operation and you change, and all of a sudden they don't love you anymore, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. It amazes me how looksist human beings are. I mean, you know, my dog has better sense. Well, she does.
Well, and you know, the thing that I find really interesting that I don't know if most people would consider is, you know, they kind of call female to male transgender like the, what is it, like the silent minority, or the silent minority, because they tend to pass, passing as in getting away with looking like a biologically born male easier than it is for a biologically born man to pass as being a female when they're trans.
Uh-huh.
But how interesting it is for someone who I worked with who had top surgery, and then because of taking testosterone was getting, you know, awful sort of UTIs and yeast infections, and having then to try to compartmentalize that, okay, yes, I still have a vulva and a vagina, even though everything else about me is uniquely male. How bizarre is it to have to go to your OBGYN and be like, this testosterone is giving me yeast infections, and I really don't like that? because I don't want the daily reminder that I'm still not, you know, a man.
Talk about body images.
I know. I mean, really, that is like hardcore. When I realize that, you know, sometimes taking testosterone can cause, you know, side effects. Some of it is male pattern baldness. Some of it is acne. But also one of the things that people don't talk about is what it does to, like, the pH of your vaginal walls.
And it Interesting.
Really, it changes it, and so you end up getting UTIs and constant sort of, you know, having issues where it's unpleasant.
I had no idea. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah.
So I wonder if, you know, a woman who is bisexual or a female ejaculator, I've heard that sometimes that comes with just a little more testosterone than, you know, females who are not ejaculators and not bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of controversy about that, so I'm not saying that that's a fact, but that is one, you know, one vein of study there. But I just wonder if that would also hold true, that bisexual female ejaculators would have more yeast infections.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I definitely do think that there's a link with, you know, the testosterone injections that people get, you know, twice a week, or the estrogen, which people get, again, you know, usually about twice a week, and it's wreaking havoc, particularly with the female reproductive system. So
yeah. Well, what about that? What about that man that had a baby?
That isn't that wild. I don't even quite understand that, and I'm a supposed sex expert, and that just still blows my mind.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing, and I think that when he decided to get pregnant, he actually had to stop taking testosterone.
Right.
And I think maybe some of his secondary sex characteristics actually lost a little bit of their emphasis, like maybe the beard wasn't quite so pronounced.
Yeah, I would think that maybe, you know, there some IVF, or there had to be some medical involvement in order to, you know, bring the egg and the sperm together, probably outside the body.
Fascinating thing, though, isn't it?
It is. It's amazing. And everyone was like, you know, their mind was literally bent, I think, for a while, thinking about it. And then he got pregnant again, and again the mind got bent. But it's just interesting. And I love people. I think they're fascinating. I've always been so curious about people, and so I just find people's stories so interesting, and I love hearing people's stories.
Oh, I do too. Now, Becky is she's chatting us up here, and she's just blowing holes in my theory here that somehow or another testosterone is linked to female ejaculation, because she says she's hormonally challenged and her testosterone is low or non-existent, and she female ejaculates.
Oh.
And the only time she gets yeast infections is when she's been out on estrogen or progesterone, or if some other hormones like cortisol are out of whack.
Interesting.
So, okay, Becky, I stand corrected.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, we have a certain amount of expertise in certain areas, but by all means, I mean, I know that I don't know everything, and I mean, I love learning, and I love when other people can engage in the conversation and teach me things, too, which is one of the reasons why I love workshops so much.
Well, and if we're also individual, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the birth control pills supposedly prevent pregnancy, but I remember when I was getting, you know, my certification over there, Spiffy, one of the women that was taking the class with me, was, you know, she had a baby who was 2 years old from taking the pill.
Yeah.
No, Becky, you are not a weirdo. She says she's not trying to blow holes in my theory. She might just be a weirdo. No, you're definitely not a weirdo, and I really appreciate your input to the shame-free zone tonight. But we are we're also individual, and I think it's so important that our healthcare providers know that, you know, and don't try to fit us into little boxes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've had a huge advantage with, everyone complains about the healthcare system, I've always been a huge advocate. When people were HIV positive, I'd go with them to their doctor's appointments. I was actually one of the first people who in San Francisco would do online outreach, like you talked about at the beginning of the hour, where I would build a relationship with, primarily it was gay men, young men, who didn't know their status. And over the course of chatting with them or texting, I would ask them if they knew their status, if they wanted to meet for coffee, and then I would go with them because I had been trained as a tester. So, you know, people who go get tested, they don't necessarily, they want to get tested, but they don't really want to go, and they don't want to tell their family, and they really don't want to tell their friends, even though they need support. So it's one of the things that I would always offer people is, you know, I'll go, let's go. If you like me, if you think that I can be helpful to you through this process, let's go. But it's one of the things that I was never afraid of because my father is an anesthesiologist, and he's still working today. But I think I was born with this inherent kind of, you know, you have to, understanding of the healthcare system and advocating for your own rights and trying to advocate for the rights of others if they're not, you know, able to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We've got some more comments coming in here from our listeners, and Ray Sunglass says, to answer the question, do you like your body? He says, when it's performing the way I expect it to, yes. Just like a man, focused on the performance there.
Well, you know what's really interesting? I don't know if you remember this movie, and I'm not a fan myself of that of the actor Gerard Butler.
Yeah?
I kind of think he's the poor man's Clive Owen. That's just my personal, so don't send me hate mail. But remember when that that movie 300 came out about 5, 6 years.
Oh, that's funny you should mention that. I actually saw that with Ray Sunglass. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know
Did we
how
win
many...
a prize or something?
You know how many men felt left that movie theater feeling horrible about themselves?
And then,
you know, picking up on the trend, 24-hour fitness, crunch fitness, these places then capitalized on knowing that insecurity, and they were building group workouts that would be that were built under the 300, you know, movie workout.
Right.
So it was the workouts that they did to get those amazing abs.
Isn't that something? And of course, you know, if anybody watches Saturday Night Live or Mad TV, you know
mm-hmm.
that they can just paint those abs on.
Right.
Don't necessarily have anything to do with exercise.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's my understanding that men are actually, especially young men, are starting mm-hmm. to have more eating disorders.
Yes.
Because of very much about the rock hard abs thing.
And, you know, I think I see it, I'm not so sure, I don't see it as much in the heterosexual community, but I see it a lot in the gay community, the young gay community. Oh my God, everyone wants to look like a twink even though they're 30.
Oh.
they want to look, you know, 18 and young and plump, and how many people are spending money on lip injections and Botox. It's crazy, but there is a lot so many people who incidentally were HIV positive. The majority of the people I dealt with at Bay Positives were HIV positive. When I would go out and do workshops, that was kind of a free-for-all. It was high schools, it was colleges. Most of the time, I didn't know their status, and at the same time, they didn't know their status, but they were, I think, assuming that they were negative, HIV negative. But many HIV positive people would talk about it, triggers. Food was a huge trigger. When I would go shopping for food for the office, oh my gosh, there were just people I couldn't go food shopping with. It was such an issue. And it's really, you know, it gets down to, you know, a deeper, really unhappiness, which, you know, is probably, if, you know, I'm not being a psychologist or psychiatrist here, but it's probably that deep-seated sort of, you know, insecurity which led them to possibly lead, you know, make those unsafe sex, you know, behaviors to begin with.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was actually with my friend Nikita Duncan, and I. She did write it too, but she paints orgasms, and so we have a new book out called Orgasms, Art, and Psyche, and she took me on a float, and I don't know if you've ever been floating in San Francisco, but it's actually a flotation tank. It's salt water.
No, I've never. You know what? And it's funny. One of my friends just mentioned it, but I know that there is a place in Chicago where I grew up that did that.
Well, they have one in San Francisco.
Deprivation, right? It's like sensory deprivation.
It is. It's great. It's dark and it's quiet, and you just float there for an hour. And it's better than a meditation. But so we're waiting. We just got out. We're completely zen. You know what I mean? We're having a cup of tea. And this young gay couple is waiting for their turn. They're going to get their very first flotation. And they're all worried about whether or not they're going to come out looking like prunes. And then they're trying to find some solace in the fact that they just had their Botox injections that day.
We're
talking about some very young men here, probably late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, oh, that is so sad. That is so sad that, you know. But, and that was probably the first time I'd actually really been exposed to what you're talking about in the gay community.
But the other thing, I work, so I kind of work now. I open up my own business, Catherine Coaches, and I work with everything from body image, because I really believe that body image can deal, brings or can make or break the way we deal with people, and that can affect the way we flirt with people, the way we date, and, of course, you know, dealing with genital shame, the way we have sex or, you know, like to have sex. We limit ourselves based on how we feel about our genitals or our body. But I knew that, you know, there was always sort of this gay drama with body image. But what I didn't know, and I'm learning now because I've been living in Silicon Valley for 10 years, is the amount of men who just have low or no self-confidence. It is seriously, as many women that have issues, men have the exact same issues.
Right.
I had no idea. This blew my mind.
Yeah. Well, I think I don't know that that's always been the case. I do think it's kind of a new thing in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what your take is on that.
You know, I don't know. I think that I have to say in the last 10 years or so, whereas we women had tons of commercials about, oh, not feeling fresh, or, you know, are you feeling fat? Go on this diet. Or these jeans will hide your, you know, belly bulge. Guys are getting commercials now. I mean, it is really mainstream for, you know, extend to make your penis harder, hair club for men, do the Bowflex. So men are getting just as much equal time, I think, for feeling, you know, for feeling bad about themselves as kind of women traditionally have.
Oh, I think so too.
I think it's they're now more equal or fair game.
Yeah, yes, equality. It's great how the equality has really degraded all of us. We've got Michelle Evans here says, you know, and her answer to do you like your body? She says, yep, it's my body made just for me. I love everything I have, sags, bags, wrinkles, and all. Just joking, I'm only 34. She's got a good sense of humor.
Yep. Well, and I think I've finally gotten to that point where I'll know I'll never have, you know, my banging body that I had at 18 and 20. And that's okay. I mean, because the thing for me is, like, you know, there's some stuff that I'm not a fan of, but I work, you have to figure out what works for you and how you can, you know, every day dress or, you know, talk in your head instead of all the negative stuff. Say something positive about how you feel or how you look, or say, you know what, today I look pretty cute, or today I look, you know, I really look nice, and I wouldn't know that, you know, I have issues, or, you know, looking at me, people probably wouldn't know that I have these, you know, body image issues.
One of the things that I think is really important when it comes to body image is, you know, realizing that somebody who has, like, let's talk about those rock hard abs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is not necessarily sexy. And this is something that I think we have completely lost touch with in our culture because we're so focused on ourselves. It's the same thing with sexual function. It seems like we think of ourselves as machines.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be, built in a certain way, and we have to function a certain way, and then we miss the real deal, which would be, rather than thinking about how we function, it's like how we feel.
Yep.
Instead of thinking about, our form again, how do you feel? We're not in our bodies anymore.
And I know, Veronica, I'm sorry that we're running out of time, and I just had two more issues I wanted to talk about with body image when you're
yeah,
done.
Go for it.
Oh, okay. So uniformly across the board, people who I talk to, the perfect woman, like the 10, the 9, the 10, the woman who looks perfect, they are not, when I talk to people, and I talk to people about their sex all the time, they never say that that's the best sex that they have because the women are so worried about what they look like when they're having sex that they don't want their stomach to pooch out or they don't want to be in certain situations or be in certain positions for that they might not look optimal. So
yeah.
It's really interesting. It totally blows the concept of, you can be beautiful on the outside, but you're not going to necessarily own your body and know how to work it for your pleasure, let alone someone else's.
Right, then, exactly, because you're on that stage.
Yep, you're always having to be perfect. Then the second thing is, oh, my God, genital image. Let me just touch a little bit about it with women wanting to get, well, first of all, most porn actresses look like a very textbook sort of vulva, like their inner lips are very short in a way so that they're shortened up either through surgery or laser surgery,
right?
Which ends up deadening and building up some scar tissue, but deadening that area. But for every person that doesn't like that, there's someone who loves the large labia. People will get those, like, clitoris pumpers, but they're labia pumpers that will pump up your inner labia so that they hang down lower. So for every person who feels like, oh, my God, I need to go get that surgery, there's someone who's going to love and worship your body exactly the way it is.
So what you're telling me is that there are people out there who are trimming their and we used to call them dog ears.
yeah, or meat flaps. I know, isn't that awful? Meat flaps. How awful.
I know. So they're trimming the labia minora so
mm-hmm.
that they won't hang past the labia majora.
Right.
And that there's also people that are wanting their labia minora to hang down, and so they're actually pumping them up.
Yes.
So this is kind of tantamount to, I have straight hair, I want curly hair. No,
yes.
I have curly hair, I want straight hair.
And there are probably just as many, if you go on site, online to look for fetishes, there are probably just as many fetish sites for large labia as there are for, like trimmed labia. And maybe not as many for trimmed labia because it's not really a term that most people are familiar with, but it's something
yeah.
that, vaginal plasty or getting laser labiaplasty is, I think, the technical term, what the doctors do. I'm losing my words right now.
That's okay.
It's what they do, and usually they will cut them or trim them so that in shots, either, photo shots or video shots, you see more penetration, which is going
right.
to be much more visually stimulating.
Catherine, I've been on the Playboy Channel, I think two or three times, I forget. I've done my share of amateur porn. I never did the mainstream porn because I found most of it quite offensive. But I had no idea. I did not know that women were altering. I knew there were surgeries out there. They've even got the shot for the G-spot,
Oh, right, where you get the Botox or whatever it is.
Right.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, but I didn't realize it was so commonplace. I didn't realize it was so industry driven.
I think probably a place like AIM down in, I think they're located in Sherman Oaks, would probably have some really good statistics on that. But I do believe it's not talked about, but it happens almost uniformly, just as much as, like, you know, people douche and do anal douches and stuff and do
right.
all that anal preparation before they do anal scenes, which
right.
isn't talked
so
about, but they
and,
do it.
And, you know, college students now, you know, usually porn is something that's associated with men, but it's quickly becoming something that women also view quite a bit of.
Mm-hmm. One in three, I believe, right? One in three women.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, one college survey that I was privy to up there in Sonoma State was more like 99% of the men and 60% of the women.
Okay. What? Okay.
Yeah. So, but you know, I mean, some of those people don't wind up in the demographics of most surveys yet because they're not actual consumers.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
you know they're still in college. But I believe that's what's coming. That's the next, you know, generation. As soon as they actually have disposable dollars, we're going to be finding out that, yeah, over half of women are looking at porn on a regular basis.
Yep.
And that's and the sad part for me is the unrealistic expectations around sexual function, and
right.
You know, because some women think that they should be having orgasms during intercourse. You know, that's great. It does happen for some women, but the vast majority of women it doesn't happen
right.
for.
Or at the same time. I mean, how many times
right.
does that happen?
Simultaneous.
As your partner.
It's true. And Becky commented again here. She says, no wonder so many women don't have orgasms. They are way too worried about things that shouldn't even be brought into the bedroom. And I'm sure we both agree with that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like they've got the camera in there. Even if the camera's not there and they've never been on camera, they're still photographing themselves while they're having sex in their mind, you know?
Yeah. I've had so much fun talking with you, Veronica.
Well, same here, and we always run just a little bit over on this show because we run late.
Okay.
So you've actually got a couple more minutes to tell the listeners how they can contact you and why they'd want to. I think it's self-evident because you're just delightful to talk to, but give us a little rundown on what it is you provide.
Okay, well, where they can contact me is www.catherinecoaches, and that's C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, coaches, C-O-A-C-H-E-S.com. And from there you can get to my blog and contact me. But what I do offer is a 20-minute free phone consultation to anyone who thinks they might benefit from my services. And my services are... I'm a sexuality speaker. I travel all over the world providing workshops, and I custom design workshops for people. Whether it's I was out in Danville a couple weeks ago for this underground book club where these women wanted to learn about their pleasure physiology along with how to give a really good blowjob. So I drove out there and had one of the best nights of my life.
Awesome.
So I do that. Do individual. I don't work with couples. I'm not a counselor or a therapist, but I do provide individual dating and sex coaching. And that can include field coaching and wing woman services. So if you are, you know, really not sure about your game, and and these are for people who've met with me before, we have to have an introductory meeting, and then I'd be more than happy to be your wing woman for an event. But really a lot of people kind of, you know, use their friends for advice, and their friends are their friends because they don't really tell them the truth as what's going on with them. Like, maybe you need to update your clothes, or you're really awkward when you talk to people, so that's probably why you're not getting any dates. I'm someone who, I'm pretty blunt, but I'm very sensitive to the fact that everyone's got feelings, and I try and make them get the person to where they want to be as quickly as possible. So when I talk about coaching, I'm not talking about, you know, years of wanting, being in using my services. 4 to 8 sessions is usually pretty optimal because it's
yeah.
short. It's very, it's short and present-centered sort of
right.
a servant-centered model, whereas
right.
how do I give you the tools so that you can go out and make things happen for yourself?
Okay. Well, and what's your email?
My email is Catherine, so C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-E, at catherinecoaches.com.
That's great. Catherine, you're just a total delight, and I hope we have you
Aww.
On here again. People really love the show. We've got Jeff Winbush says it was a good show, very informative and entertaining. I agree. I'm really glad that you joined us in the Shame-Free Zone. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thanks, Catherine. Okay. Thanks. We'll talk soon. I just know we're going to run into each other.
I know, and you know what? I will make it happen because I really want to meet you after seeing. After seeing all of you, I immediately loved you from seeing your videos. On
oh,
TV.
Thank you.
Well, and
thank
then
you
seeing
so
your
much.
Your interviewing, you bring a totally different flavor to what most people think of sex work. But I'm so delighted to have been on this show. So thank you so much, Veronica.
Thanks, Catherine.
Okay.
Look forward to hooking up with you in San Francisco sometime soon.
Okay. Talk later.
Okay. All
Bye.
Right. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me.
Sering kesepian.